We have returned with our featured guest in a multiple-part conversation, Jean-Claude Coven. He's written a book, Going Deeper, How to Make Sense of Your Life When Your Life Makes No Sense. Just a brief recap in our last conversation. We defined and described the 70 million wanderers who are from other densities or dimensions of being here on this earth to help a transition, a change, which we're going to talk about somewhere down the line here, that is going on for human beings, other life forms, the planet itself, the solar system. There's a lot happening right now that you bring into Going Deeper. And we'll get into it. Let me ask you just before my next question, which is more about you, and I want to get into who you are. The 70 million wanderers, you know, when you read the description of some of the attributes of them from Going Deeper, that is in the beginning, the jacket notes, I read something already, and even in the back of the book where you so neatly talk about allergies and immune system disorders that are experienced by these people, and the fact that you and I are talking, are we those that we, you know, that I'm not fully aware of the density I come from, or you, or are we ordinary human beings, and we're yet to link up with these 70 million?
What an extraordinary question.
I mean, I related to it totally.
No, I have found that this is a fairly self-selective group. You know, not to use the analogy of cream and rising to the top, but it does find its own level. And what wanderers are, we're really misfits. We are strangers in a strange land. We know this is not our home. We realize that all the stuff that's going on this planet is not working. The subtitle of the book, How to Make Sense of Your Life When Your Life Makes No Sense, at the core of our being, we realize that we've bought into some sort of collective myth that not all of us has signed on to, that part of us is refusing, like a horse refusing a jump, and we're saying, there's something wrong here. And when you step back and you get away from your evaluative, judgmental self, and you move, you know, maybe a million miles off of the planet, looking down at planet Earth, and you take a look at the collective condition of what humankind has created, it certainly cannot be more of the same to get rid of it. We have a terrible fire going on here, and the answer cannot be let's drown it with gasoline. So we have to find a brand new concept, not of what to do. It's no longer up to our institutions to fix it, but a brand new concept of who each of us really is. And instead of saying, who am I? What is my purpose? Why am I here? Let's ask a more fundamental question. What is here? How was here created? Why was here created? Who created it? Once we get that information, once we begin to understand the fullness of creation itself from the point of view of creation and see how the third density, how the earth experience fits into the totality of all that is, all of a sudden our entire perspective shifts.
Let me, you know, divert a little bit from going deeper in the preliminary discussions we have, because I know there's some listeners out there thinking, you know, who is this guy Jean-Claude? And, you know, the jacket describes you to some degree as a highly successful entrepreneur and an awareness-expanding workshop facilitator and a lover of the mystery of creation. Now, you have journeyed around the world. I read a lot of the materials. In fact, more than halfway through the book, I decided to go to the back because the acknowledgments weren't in the front. They were in the back of the book. And your acknowledgments are not typical as you'll find them in most books. I mean, you know, you tell a story with your acknowledgments. Very important, I think. So I was kind of amazed to see what your journey was. And I'd like you to just talk a little bit about, you know, your family background. You're breaking through some of the acculturalization of our childhood experiences. How you did business as an entrepreneur and the adventures that you did, and how all of that led you to pierce some of the veils of illusion that we've been talking about. What were the key highlights in that evolution, and perhaps include your discovery of winkers, if you would.
Winkers and wankers.
Winkers and wankers.
With pleasure. Okay, yeah. We're going back to the chakras now.
Mm-hmm.
And recall that we talked about the fact that all personality, everything that we have as viewpoints, judgments, are simply interference patterns or imprints in the chakras. As perception comes through, they cause interference patterns and cause us to have preference or cause us to have reaction or give us our concept of right and wrong, which is extremely arbitrary. In order to go from the sixth density, or in order to go from a higher state of awareness prior to taking birth on the planet, the soul has to pass through the veil of forgetting. This creates its own imprinting. Without that, you would have much too much awareness and much too much knowledge, access to much too much information, to have a full and real experience within the emotional realm. Emotions require a lack of understanding and a lack of awareness. So that's the first level of imprinting that's put in by the veil itself as you move through the density. The second is very interesting, and it deals directly with the question you ask. The second level of imprinting comes through with the particular previous incarnations you want to pick as your own. A soul is not, what we view as soul, is strictly a portion of consciousness, is not as intact and separate as we like to make it, thinking that you had previous lives. You did and you didn't. You pick what you wish as your previous incarnations, much as you would pick the ingredients into which to put into a stew, depending on what you're making that night. And obviously no one is going to pick the person who lugged the rocks or fed the mashed peas to people at the pyramid. They would pick someone in the Pharaoh's court or the Pharaoh or somebody else, because it's a richer ingredient to use. That's why you see so many people who are princesses or pharaohs or priests or scribes or people of consequence.
Well, how do you relate that, Jean-Claude, to the suffering that goes on, too? Having free will and hopefully being able to have some choice about what I pick, I wouldn't think I would want to come back and do war again. You know what I'm saying?
I do. There's a vast difference between free will and choice.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I understood it. I didn't understand it till 10 days ago.
10 you, days ago?
Literally. No, yeah. I wake up every day saying, okay, guys,
yeah.
And I talk to the universe as guys.
Mm-hmm.
I say, I know absolutely nothing. Teach me.
Uh-huh.
And if you can walk into every situation saying, I know absolutely nothing, teach me, the most amazing things happen. And if you arrive filled with questions and awe and wonder, your whole life takes on a different meaning. I have three words that are over my desk that guide my life. The first word is curiosity,
mm-hmm.
because that is the only substance that dissolves judgment. The second is willingness, because no matter what the universe throws my way, the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is humility,
mm-hmm.
so that I never buy into the belief that any of this nonsense, any of this stuff, is actually coming from me.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm privileged to be part of this effort to bring this information to the planet. It is not coming from me. It comes through me. It comes through my higher self. It was a download, whatever the terms are, that I don't want to buy into it from an ego level.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between free will and choice is explained to me this way. Free will is you can move anywhere on the chessboard you wish. You can make any legal move that any of the pieces can make. That's free will. And that's an extraordinary thing to be able to move your life around that way.
Mm-hmm.
Choice is, Alan, you're free to go anywhere within the red square you like. That's choice.
Yeah.
Our personalities can only make choice. Our personalities are incapable of free will. People here are besotted by the concept of relationship. How do I make my life better? What they don't realize is the only part of their being that could be in relationship is the lower egoic part that's involved in personality. Full of preference, full of desires, full of wants, full of needs, full of all the wonderful warm and fuzzy stuff of which the third density is made. But they also have a part called the aware ego. And again, the book goes into this thing in beautiful detail,
mm-hmm.
which allows them to choose which personality is appropriate and begin to realize that they have never, the essence of who they really are has never emerged. They've been constantly driven by one of their predominant personalities that steps forward to take control because at an early age that meant survival, and they've never been personally in charge themselves. And each of these sub-personalities is full of predilection, full of preference, full of bias, and can only see from its distorted point of view. It's like playing an entire symphony with just the oboe. Beautiful sound, but it doesn't make for a symphony. Mm-hmm. And that's how we go through our lives. Now, in to answer your question, mm-hmm. How was I born? What was my life about?
Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
I mean, you're digging into something which is so vast. It's difficult to take small bites. So the first imprint was going through the veil. The second imprint was choosing your previous lives. And that creates patterning for you that are put into the chakras. The third is very interesting. You pick the exact circumstances of your birth, and they are perfect for you. They were deliberately picked by you and your higher self to create the circumstances of learning that you would have during this incarnation. And you carry with you, you carry all the miasms of the genetic code of that family. So you have a birth family as well as a soul family, which would be all the oneness of creation. I picked two older people, one German, one French, both Jewish, in Europe, during the Second World War. This was not a very, very popular thing to be. So we had to escape Nazi Germany, took a Portuguese fishing boat from North Africa to New York. And I grew up, I like to tell people I grew up on an island on the East Coast, not telling them, of course, that it's the island of Manhattan. So I grew up really a young stranger in a strange land with alienated parents. My parents never made the transition to being American. They were always beautifully European. They were older than I, so that we didn't share things. We didn't have a cultural commonality. And as a youngster, I wanted to belong, and I was called Frenchie, and I never belonged. I appeared to, and I learned at an early age that I knew how to fake it, and I learned at an early age that I was always something that, as a child, I called 1/8 of a second out of phase, that there was a world going on that I could appear to be in, but I was never really in it.
Yeah, boy, does that sound familiar, Jean-Claude.
That's true, doesn't it?
Yeah. It sounds so familiar. Yeah. Wow. So, did you evolve, through your younger days, your family, your education, and go in? Because I see you're an entrepreneur. You've done a bunch of businesses. I just wanted to find out what you did. I mean, I come out of the pharmaceutical industry and spent 12 years as an executive. And the whole time I was doing it, it was like, I was watching myself all the time at one step removed from the being that was immersed in this task, thinking that this was what I needed to do. Yeah. So I'm just wondering, what was that like for you too? What did you do in business? And it says you're highly successful. How did you wake up out of that,
I woke up out of it by succeeding.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It was really weird. I worked in corporate America. I worked for a major advertising agency. Mm-hmm. On Madison Avenue in New York, and then from there in their market research department, went to one of their major clients, and realized that I was functionally unemployable. I was a threat to my peers, and
I like that.
And I sort of was in business for myself within the business, doing my own thing, helping the corporation, and constantly marching to a different drummer. And I started my own business early on in my 20s in college marketing. It evolved from one company to another, and we eventually owned some mail order companies that we sold to a public company for what at the time was an obscene amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
I retired 3 times, and what happened was I ended up, catching the brass ring. I had all the things that society told me I was supposed to have, and I realized that I had nothing.
Uh-huh.
And my life then was Greenwich, Connecticut, and then I had a beautiful house in Fairfield, Connecticut. An apartment in West Palm Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually left my first wife, not because we didn't love each other, but because we were literally the two characters in the book. We were shouting at each other across an ever-widening chasm,
mm-hmm.
where she absolutely adored the material life, and this is what she wanted to do this time around. And she's an incredibly wonderful lady.
Yeah.
And I needed to go on the spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
And I wandered off, realizing that what I had accomplished was their goal. It wasn't mine.
Yeah,
And finally, the itch in me became so deep that I had to scratch. And I said, okay, if it is none of the above, and I went and I looked at the various religions, and I read something in the Tao which absolutely stirred me, totally changed my life, which said very simply, if one man asks of the Tao and another explains, neither understands.
I'm glad you said that. Well, let's do this. We'll take another break here.
Okay.
Talking with Jean-Claude Coven, he has written a book, Going Deeper, How to Make Sense of Your Life When Your Life Makes No Sense. And we're talking about the book as well as peripheral discussions about his work and his life and our life and why we're doing this. So we'll come back here and continue with more.